Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. There are many issues confronting education today, and one of those that can have far-reaching consequences for students, faculty, and administrators is the issue of chronic student absenteeism. That's when kids miss at least 3.5 weeks of school in a given school year. Millions of kids across America fall into this category. It is far too often a predictor of future failure on several levels. Chronic absenteeism is the subject of a special St. Louis Public Radio project called Accounted For. We have a Blue Ribbon panel to discuss the issue, its fallout, and ways to deal with it. Professor Robert Belfonts is senior research scientist at Johns Hopkins University and is co-director of the Everyone Graduates Center at Johns Hopkins. He's done extensive research on issues including chronic absenteeism, especially in high poverty schools. Ruby Jones is a senior director of relationship support at Big Brothers Big Sisters of Eastern Missouri. She supervises the ABC Today staff. ABC stands for Attend School, Behave, Have Classroom Success. Jamie Jordan is the principal at the Brittany Woods Middle School in University City and was named the 2013 Principal of the Year by the Missouri Association of Secondary School Principals. But we begin with Tim Lloyd, St. Louis Public Radio's education reporter. He is the reporter for our Accounted For project, and Tim kicks off his reporting, that is, on our website at stlpublicradio.org. You can see that reporting right there as of today. But, Tim, give us kind of an overview, if you will, of what you've found in your reporting.
Well, Don, thanks for having me. So Accounted For is a project that looks at something called chronic absenteeism, which you sort of just laid out in the introduction, but is defined as missing 10% or more of a school year for any reason. And there are far-reaching impacts as far as student achievement, not just for the individual student who maybe is missing a lot of school, but also for classrooms and entire schools, because what happens is students who perhaps get behind in a lesson can get frustrated in class. They can act out, cause behavior issues in a school, and ultimately drive up an unsafe school environment, which can lead to even more absenteeism. Mm-hmm. So the state of Missouri just recently made a big switch in how it tracks attendance. In the past, and for years, attendance was tracked under something called average daily attendance, which is just a simple percentage. But under the Missouri School Improvement Plan 5, the latest iteration of that plan, it started zooming in on individual students, so looking at the attendance rates for each student. And what that did was it revealed quite a different picture of attendance in the state. And I just want to play you what Riverview Gardens Superintendent Scott Spurgeon told me about this switch toward tracking individual student attendance under an initiative called 90-90.
The 90-90 changed the game. I mean, it literally made an about-face and turned it, because in MSIP 4, the students that were here all the time always made up for those students that had chronic absenteeism issues. You could still work out a 92 to a 95%, you know, attendance rate over the period of the year. But with 90-90, it literally looks at each individual child.
And so based on those numbers, about 108,000 students in the state of Missouri missed at least 10% of school last year.
It sounds like an old problem, but only now receiving new attention.
That's right. And it was a problem that was buried in the numbers. Again, that average daily attendance really didn't account for individual students with attendance problems. And like Superintendent Spurgeon just mentioned, you can have what looks like really great attendance for average daily attendance, but when you zoom in on individual children, it can reveal quite a different picture.
What's the fallout for these kids?
Well, it's wide-ranging. If a student is chronically absent in the early grades, it can lead to them being behind in reading skills in third grade. If you go forward to middle school and high school, it can start becoming an early warning sign of a student dropping out. And I just want to play you something from Hetty Chang. She directs Attendance Works, which is a national initiative geared toward reducing chronic absenteeism. And she kind of just lays out what the research shows as far as the impacts of for a student who misses this much school.
We have found from national research is that when kids start missing 10% or more of school, it just adds up to too much lost time in the classroom. And starting as early as actually pre-K and K, it is an early warning sign that a child is academically at risk. likely in the early grades, not to end up reading at grade level by middle and high school. It's highly correlated with doing much worse on math, and it's actually an early warning sign of dropout.
So again, we know all these negative impacts of chronic absenteeism. So accounted for, the real purpose of the project is to look at two simple questions but often have complicated inputs and outputs, which are, why do so many students miss so much school? And then, of course, what can be done about it?
Is there an easy fix or is there a known fix?
Well, I think the guest today will tell you that there's no easy fix and there's no necessarily one individual known fix. There are strategies that people are experimenting with to try and really engage students and also engage families and entire communities about why it's so important. It's just a simple idea, but just getting a kid to school every day can make a really big difference.
One other question I have for you, Tim, and that is that school funding is often and usually based on attendance. Is this affecting the funding for schools that have a serious problem with absenteeism?
Well, the 90-90 does not determine school funding as of right now from the state. It's still average daily attendance. So this is part of the Missouri School Improvement Plan 5, which is ultimately used to determine a district's state accreditation. It counts for 10 out of a possible 140 points on that scale. But again, when you have a large percentage of students who are chronically absent, it has been shown that that can ripple out into sections that count for a lot more points. Particularly test scores.
What about future segments of your reporting? When does it all start on the air?
Well, we're going to start on the air on Monday, and in particular, we're going to look at the Riverview Gardens School District, which is in North St. Louis County. It has been unaccredited since 2007. It has a new superintendent this year. His name is Scott Spurgeon. We just heard from him earlier, and one of the big ways that he's trying to earn back that district state accreditation is simple. Just get kids to school.
Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. Tim Lloyd, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having
me. Reminding the audience once again that you're kicking off the reporting on our website today at stlpublicradio.org, and your radio reports will begin next Monday.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for being with us. Now on to our other guests. Robert Balfons, research scientist at Johns Hopkins University. Jamie Jordan is the principal of the Brittany Woods Middle School. And Ruby Jones is with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Eastern Missouri. I'll turn to you, Professor Balfons, to begin with. Did you hear anything from Tim's overview that surprised you?
No, I guess unfortunately no. I mean, he captured very well what we've learned about chronic absenteeism, that we argue it's like bacteria in a hospital. It's sort of an unseen force that wreaks havoc with our efforts to educate kids. And it's unseen because until recently we haven't measured it, so we haven't noticed it.
Is there a profile, a typical student that is chronically absent?
Well, what we found is there's three broad types of students. There's one group of students can't come to school. They're involved in elder care or child care. They have to work on the side to help the family. Something is keeping them out of school. There's another group of kids that won't come to school because they're being teased or bullied or don't feel safe in school or going to school, or sometimes just because they overslept and don't want to face the penalty of walking in late. And then finally, there's a group of kids who just don't come to school because they know no one will notice if they're not there. And they've decided they can miss a few days here and there and still get by. And on those few days they take off, they find it more engaging to be elsewhere.
Given the research that you've done extensive research in New York City, I know, dealing with schools that are basically listed as poverty schools, if you will, is this an issue that is directly related to poverty?
In large part, yes. I mean, when you peel back the reasons why kids are not in school, many are related to poverty, though, as I said, sometimes it is being teased or bullied, which cuts across kids from all kinds of backgrounds.
Is this a pattern that generally starts early and remains, or is it something that kind of comes and goes with individual students?
Yeah, it's a very interesting pattern, which is rates of chronic absenteeism are quite high in pre-kindergarten and kindergarten, which should be we should keep in mind as we push to expand pre-K, which is really important. It's both expanding pre-K and making sure kids get there. Then attendance gets better in early elementary school, and for whatever reason, the best attending kids are typically fourth graders. And then when early adolescence starts to hit, kids make the independent decision, is schooling for me? And chronic absenteeism starts going up again, especially with a transition to middle school, and then hits another high in the ninth grade.
All right. Well, let me turn to our other guests here and get their perspective on this. Julie, let me turn to you. You've been nodding throughout what you've been hearing here. This is all very familiar stuff to you, I gather.
Yeah, it is something that we work very diligently on when we look at kids and how we work towards it. And what we were speaking of earlier, I really do appreciate that the way that the state is looking at the new attendance in terms of accreditation in school districts, because the average daily attendance was more broad scoping. But when we really look at the 90% of the kids coming 90% of the time, you have to drill down to each individual student and try to get to the reasons why they're not coming. And the ones that were mentioned, can't come, won't come, don't come, that really sums up the full picture. But how you target each one of those is very different.
I called you Julie a moment ago. Oh. I'm sorry. Julie Jordan was a character in Carousel.
That's also my sister, so that's, I'm used really, to the Julie.
Okay. All right. Now, let me turn to Ruby now. Ruby, what's your perspective on this through Big Brothers, Big Sisters?
Yeah, I agree with everything that's been said, and I think the can't come, won't come, don't come is really important, because as we look at our students and try to figure out what's really happening, there isn't one quick fix. There's not one reason why kids aren't coming to school. It's a variety of different reasons, and we really have to have the resources and the right folks at the table to address each student individually.
What resources are we talking about?
Community partners are very important in working with schools. Our relationships with our schools are very important in our ability to drill down on the kids who we're working with to help the overall population of the schools. School principals have so much going on, and they're charged to really improve and help with the success of so many kids. I think it's helpful for them when an agency comes in and says, hey, I can take these kids. I can focus on the kids who I'm serving and really take them off your plate for a little bit. I can help you, because that just really improves the overall morale at the school and the attendance of all the kids, the behavior of all of the kids. So it makes their job a lot easier.
Jamie, your partnership is with one of the universities.
We do. Actually, Brittany Woods is building a community school, which basically brings in lots of different partnerships. We have a substantial partnership with Washington University, but we also partner with many different other groups, the Wyman Foundation, as well as Big Brothers, Big Sisters. And what I've seen recently in the difference in education in the last 10 years is really the role of social workers in the school and how social workers can help tie into these community relationships. Ruby said it right, that most educators and principals and administrators all come in with sort of a background on educating kids. And when we really start breaking down chronic absenteeism, we have to look at the social issues why. And so that support of the community resources and social workers into the school structure is really important.
Right. We'll continue this conversation after a break. I'll take that now. You just heard from Jamie Jordan, principal of the Brittany Woods School in University City. That's the middle school in University City. Ruby Jones, also in studio, is with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Eastern Missouri. And joining us from the Baltimore area is Robert Balfons, research scientist at Johns Hopkins University. Back to continue this conversation, we'd love to hear from you. If you've got some thoughts about this chronic absenteeism issue, please let us know. Maybe you have some ideas for dealing with it. We'd love to hear that as well. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd like to send us a tweet, we'll take that at STL on Air. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. Our subject today is chronic absenteeism in our schools. My guests are Robert Balfons, research scientist at Johns Hopkins University. Jamie Jordan is the principal at the Brittany Woods Middle School in University City. And Ruby Jones is with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Eastern Missouri. Professor Balfons, let me come back to you and ask you a little bit more about the research that you've done in New York City. I know it's been extensive. What are some of the things that surprised you the most in that research?
I think two things stood out. One, just on the magnitude of the challenge, that in the most impacted elementary schools, we're talking about over 100 kids, the most impacted middle schools, 250, and a high school can be 500 kids. You can see when it gets to that level how the schools can't do it alone. Who can make 500 phone calls to kids in one day? Yet we know if every absence doesn't get a response, you get more absences. On the positive side, the one thing we learned is that this site with New York City called success mentors, but you can call them many things. But this idea of having someone that's working with a subset of kids on a regular basis, monitoring their attendance, calling them if they're not there, saying, what can we do to get you in by 10, by 11? We miss you. We want you here. And then trying to figure out what's behind it and then being able to, if it's a serious issue, be able to refer them to the appropriate people who can help can make a real difference. We found that on average, kids that got these success mentors gained more than two and a half more weeks of schooling, which we also found was educationally significant. That was related to higher test scores, better passing rates, fewer dropouts.
On average, how many days would an average student miss during a school year?
Well, there's really two groups of kids. There's the kids that are just around that month or, you know, maybe a little more than a month. And then there's kids that are missing two or more months. You know, and it's really staggering to think we have kids that are missing 40 days of school on a regular basis. And what really is the shocking thing is that chronic absenteeism for many kids is a chronic experience. It's not just a one-year event. And if you look at how much time they've missed over, say, a period of 3 or 4 or 5 years, you can find a significant number of students who miss a full year of schooling over a 3 to 4 to 5 year period. And that explains a lot of our achievement gaps. If you miss a year of schooling during the middle grades, we shouldn't be shocked that you show up to high school not prepared to succeed.
Yeah, what I was getting at there was comparing the kids who are not in this category to those who are chronically absent. I mean, if we use 3.5 weeks as the kind of the benchmark here, what about those kids who aren't chronically absent? They must do 3-5 days a year? How much?
Yeah, right. That's, yeah, you know, a typical kid is going to miss somewhere between 3 to 6 days a year, which is, you know, one cold, maybe two colds, maybe one family trip.
And the kids who are chronically absent, do they miss school single days at a time or groups of days at a time?
The more typical pattern is a day here, a day there, which makes it even more problematic. We know if a student had a serious illness or something happened and they disappeared for 2 or 3 weeks, we would mobilize around that student and find an answer. But it's when you miss a day here, 2 days there, 3 days there, that both the student themselves don't actually know how much that adds up, and the school itself isn't keeping track.
Let me come back to Jamie Jordan here. And, Professor, I'll give the same question to you after she responds. And that is there a ripple effect? Does this have an effect on other students who don't fall into this category?
What we see is that we really do try to – the success mentors that the professor was talking about is exactly how we've set up the structure here in our school, where we try to get where we have somebody who's looking at the data and then breaks the kids into groups to try to figure out who those mentors are to bring them in. The ripple effects occur when the student returns to school and they're not used to the structures of the social work or the learning or whatever is going on within the classroom setting. And so sometimes the teachers have to make time to catch them back up, or we have to – significant resources have to be allocated to those students to make sure that they're doing what they need to do to be at and above grade level. What's the saddest part is for those kids that don't come, that they feel like they're just not noticed if they're not there, because those are the ones that we really need to make sure that we're reaching out for and that they're trackable. And that's why data is important for school administrators. It's really a jump off to start looking for what are we doing for each individual child. But the ones that really come to us for the don't and the won't, those are the ones that we really need to get involved with the school side. And then the can't come is more of the social work concerns.
Sure. Professor, what about you with regard to ripple effect?
Yeah, well, one of the things we've seen is, again, especially in a school that has a, you know, these large number of kids chronically absent, is it puts a teacher in a no-win position because they essentially have a slightly different set of kids in the classroom every day. And so either they have to begin every class with, well, let me remind you what we did yesterday, mm-hmm. and then sort of lose the kids who were there, and they might get restless and a few might act out, or they might have to say, well, you know, if you weren't here, check with a friend and try to catch up because we have to move ahead. And then those kids will act up and often detract and take attention from the teacher from teaching the lesson.
Right.
So there can be substantial spillover effects.
Do you come across any of this, Ruby?
Yes, we do have some school partnerships where we have our staff actually embedded in the schools, so they get to see the ripple effects as well. What we see sometimes also is there are kids who may be chronically absent, and then the parent makes whatever decisions, and also the siblings or the other family members kind of roll into the same problem of that kid's not going to school, I'm not going to school too. So it affects not only the school environments, but sometimes it also just rolls into the family and other kids who are there who start missing school as well.
Just another indication of how serious a problem this is and how far-reaching it can be. We have a number of calls and callers who want to get into this discussion. Let's bring them in. We'll start with Scott calling from Chesterfield. Scott, you're on the air. Go ahead.
How many abandoned infants, homeless kids, foster care kids, abused kids, maybe, you know, kids with parents that are abusing drugs. How many are there? And is it a problem for public education? Is it a problem for society, or can we just ignore it?
Okay, Professor, let me start with you on that. Is there any way to measure what he's asking about?
Well, it's hard to know exact numbers. What we do know is that certain schools actually have high percentage of those kids. They might be located near a group foster home or several group foster homes or in a very distressed neighborhood of the city. So it could be quite high percentage of the kids in a given school. And the answer, does it matter? I mean, why it matters to us and to a community is that there is no work in the 21st century if you're a high school dropout. So you will drop out of school, but you will stay in the community and not have a way to support yourself, which will be very bad for you and very bad for the community. So even though we might not think it's the job of a school to do what it takes to get kids to come to school every day, in many cases they are the only institution that's in a position to do something about that. And therefore, they have to, partnering with community partners because they can't do it alone, make it part of their mission to do what it takes to get kids to come to school every day.
Jamie, do you see this pattern? Do you see it that the kids who are not coming to school basically are the homeless kids, the kids that have drugs, parents with drug problems?
To be honest, not in my school. Right. And I have to speak a little bit freely and maybe a little bit proudly, but we've actually met and exceeded our attendance goal. So when they are talking about like the mass amount of students that are missing, like the professor's talking about, that's not what we see at Brittany Woods. So we really are working with kind of a cross-section of lots of different students for lots of different reasons. And so it's not necessarily just the students that are in transition or the students who are coming from foster care. It really is for lots of different reasons that the students are coming. And so to kind of break it down into groups and work on it that way. But we may be looking at a different picture than, say, the massive problems with the school.
But as an educator, you certainly have to be aware of the problem and when solutions come along, if they come along,
right,
how to deal with that.
Absolutely.
One of the things that that we learned in this program several months ago, and I was unaware of, is a large number of homeless kids that are attending public schools in our area. And I'm sure, Professor, that's the case in New York, too, where you've done your research. It's just staggering to think how many kids go to school and then have no place really to go when they leave school.
Yes, it is. And one thing they actually did in New York, and again, this seems like a no-brainer, but sometimes we don't do the no-brainers until we do them, is that the kids that were living in homeless shelters, the homeless shelters didn't have access to those kids' school attendance records. So they didn't really know which of their kids were going to school or not. And once they made that data available, then they could help make sure the kids were getting to the right buses and had a way to get to school. And then ultimately, they actually built them a place to do their homework, and they had very strong impacts on the attendance of homeless kids just by doing those simple things of checking and monitoring and making sure the kids got on the right bus to the right school in the morning.
I guess, Ruby, it makes it tough to find these kids, too, to find mentors for them, which is so important.
Yes, it does present some challenges in mentors knowing where to go get the kids. I think our staff do a great job of building relationships with the parents and children so that they reach out to us and let us know, hey, this is my new phone number, this is where I'm staying. Sometimes what's overlooked is those children who are maybe not living in homeless shelters but who have inadequate housing. So families that are living in a one-bedroom apartment with 10 people who are staying there. Nobody's name is on the lease. So technically, they don't really have a place to stay. And it's challenging for those children to get to school regularly because this week they could be staying in North City. Next week they could be staying in South County. And they still have to get to their school regardless of where it is.
Let's take another call. Jeffrey joins us from St. Louis. Jeffrey, thanks for being with us. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Jesse. Did you say Jeffrey?
I did, but go ahead. We've made the connection, so go ahead.
Well, my story kind of dictates the question and how you guys would understand it. Basically, what happened with me was when I was in elementary school at a young age, my parents were trying to get me into special resources. That's for ADHD. The principal was decidedly against that and was much more focused on the AAA program for the honor students and the students that had the highest GPA, I guess what you could call it. So at any rate, at one point, he put me into a carrel for about a month or two. He told me not to tell my parents, and my parents only found out because a church member went to our school, and she had asked me why I was in there all the time. That started kind of the beginning of me not wanting to go to school. So on the way to school, I would dilly-dally. I would take my time. I would pretty much do anything I could to avoid being there. That continued on into high school, became kind of a chronic problem for me being late and whatnot. Now, it's important to say that all of this time that though I missed class, I would actually do quite well on the test. My grades would suffer because I would miss a lot of homework, but I would also do very, very well on the test. And the high school point is where it kind of started to come to a head and really be troublesome because I missed a lot of school. It affected my grades, and the administrators, I don't think, particularly liked it. And the vice principal one day actually asked me to drop out of school, which I did. So I guess the question and what my biggest concern is that I always thought that there was such oversight on the problems behind why students are doing what they're doing, and that this 90-90 rule could not only help monitor that individual students and not getting to school on time and not doing what they're supposed to and falling behind, but also it could help monitor the administrators that maybe aren't keeping the best interest in mind. It's very easy to hide in that 90% statistic when it's something with all the students. And it disappoints me. You know, I got a 29 on my ACT. I'm in the top 2% of the country for scientific reasoning. I did that test without studying for it, yet I dropped out of school and my opportunities are now limited. I eventually took my GED and got 100% on it, but it just doesn't hold the same clout as a degree.
Thanks for your call and for your story. I'll turn to the administrator here and get some reaction from Jamie. What do you think?
Well, I completely agree. And one of the things that what I appreciate about the 90% of the students there 90% of the time is that you must individually drill down to what's going on with each individual student. Mm-hmm. But the other part he brought up is really important, and that's about engaging instruction. You know, problem-based learning and the STEM research and things that are going on. The skills that we're trying to teach the students in schools today is very, very different than even the skills 10 and 15, 20 years ago. With the adoption of the Common Core and whatever your belief is about the Common Core, it is a movement towards skills versus just content memorization. And so the teachers are really trained, and we're using a lot of professional development, and specifically with our partnership with Washington University and other colleges in terms of professional development, to train teachers on how to build classrooms where kids want to be there. What are some interactive, involving lessons where they're asked to think critically, and really helps promote all different types of learners, build into their creativity, build into their inquiry skills. It's a really important part. And so one of the components of our community school is engaging instruction. How do we really get the students to want to come and learn, to really figure out puzzles and to think creatively? And that then transfers to after-school activities and robotics and other things that we can really build upon. But that real-world learning is really, really important. And it is a change in education, and it's going to be very different for our parents because the homework that comes home will look different. The activities in the class will be different. But you have to remember we're in a whole different age now with computers and technology, and so it's important to train our graduates to be ready for that.
Professor, any thoughts from our caller?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a perfect example of the thing that in early adolescence we make the decision, is schooling for us or is it something to be endured? And if we're put in a situation where our experience is it's something to be endured, then we try to get by with doing it as little as possible and still making it. And often it's very easy to miscalculate that and miss enough days that you actually don't succeed.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, after you. I'll finish your
thought. Oh, and I was going to say it is important that there be some to track how schools are doing, because sometimes, you know, not all the times, there's an attitude that we teach the kids who come. And if a kid can't get here, it's on them or their parents. What can we do about it? But we've really got to have an attitude that it's in all our interest for kids to be in school every day, and we all have to do something about it.
And
go ahead, Ruby.
I think the caller brought up an interesting point about looking at the whole student. So not looking at just one number, but really looking at all of the things that are going on with the student. When we talk about ABC today, we look at attendance grades, behavior, also math and reading grades, to get a picture of what's really happening with that student. And this is where resources can serve as advocates for students if they really need that special resource, being there to support the parent in all of those meetings, to advocate with them, to make sure they know really what their rights are, and also working with the school to make sure we're putting the right resources behind students so they don't get so frustrated that they don't want to go back to school.
Professor, you know, in looking over all of this, one of the things that occurs to me is there's so little emphasis anymore on the trades, if you will, that we're so caught up in the core subjects and STEM and all the rest of it, obviously very important. But there are a lot of kids who know they're not going to go to college, who don't want to go to college, who want to learn a trade. And it just occurs to me if there were options for them to do that, they might be more responsive to attending classes and learning how to be a auto mechanic or an electrician.
Yeah, and there actually is a movement back to sort of a reimagined career in technical education, which is aligned with sort of good middle class jobs. There's even a program that uses fees from H-1B visas, which is when an employer says there's no American who can do this job, to actually create more career and technical education in schools to prepare kids to be able to do those jobs. So it is important to have pathways that kids can believe in that lead to some sort of post-secondary schooling or training so they see a point of coming to school every day.
Exactly. One of these days, we're not going to have any more plumbers or any more electricians or any more bricklayers because everybody's worried, about the core curriculum. That's just my thought, my two cents worth. I have to take another break. We'll do that now and come back and continue our conversation about chronic absenteeism in school and the problems that it can cause, not only for the students themselves, but for schools, administrators, teachers, and certainly families. Our guests are Robert Balfonce, research scientist at Johns Hopkins University, Ruby Jones with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Eastern Missouri. She's with me in studio, as is Jamie Jordan, the principal of the Brittany Woods Middle School. Come back and continue the conversation and take your calls. We have a lot of them. We'll be right back. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We continue our conversation on chronic absenteeism in our schools. I want to go right to the phones. We have a number of calls, as I've mentioned. Let's start with Chuck calling from Washington, Missouri. Chuck, go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. When I was in grade school about 55-plus years ago, we had what were called truant officers, and I got picked up several times standing on a street corner with a couple other guys smoking cigarettes. They'd either take me back to school or write my mother and father a letter or both. And do we still have truant officers, or is that a thing of the past? Also, second point, at the risk of being politically incorrect, what's the breakdown between percentage in predominantly black schools as opposed to predominantly white schools?
Okay, two questions there. I'm going to start with Jamie first with regard to truant officers. Do we still have them?
We do have truant officers, but it's a little bit different. It's through the Department of Family Services, and it's not exactly the same thing. You can get the police involved and go that route if you want to, but typically we try to stay on the other side of that to really try to figure out the why side. But unfortunately, sometimes you are working with families and kids that eventually you do have to do hotline calls and get the Division of Family Services involved to try to work on what's going on with getting the kids to school. At middle school, it's a little bit different than high school when we're working on that side.
Professor Balfonce, how about in New York and the schools you've studied? Number one, do they have truant officers there? And number two, are we talking about predominantly black schools or not?
So the truant officer, it varies by locale if they still have them or not. Usually the problem is that they have just a couple and there's more kids that need supports than a couple of truant officers can work with, though some districts have developed very effective sort of supportive proactive use of what were once called truant officers. They tend to give them a new name. Not coming to school is not a black or white issue. It really follows the patterns of poverty, which is an equal opportunity denier.
Your emphasis has been on urban schools. Is there a rural component to this particular problem?
There is. I mean, it varies. And sometimes the the interesting about rural schools is that they still often basically have school buses that come and pick you up at your front door. And in that situation, your parents can sort of see you on the bus, and someone will then see you off the bus at the school. It makes it a little harder to sort of ditch if you want to, though many kids tune out once they're in school and sort of roam the halls. But in urban areas, what often is the case is by middle school, kids are often taking mass transportation, which makes it very easy, if they so choose, for their parents to see them get on the bus and for them to turn right and not left mm-hmm. at the transfer point. And the school has no way of knowing if they were headed their way or not that day.
Back to the phones. Let's bring in Eric calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Eric. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm a homeschooling dad who lives in the city. And this idea has popped into my head from time to time. I mean, as I hear you talk, what I'm hearing really is that the underlying problem is really not the school. It's the family that the children are coming out of. And I'm thinking that there is no way for a large-scale institution to ever make up for what a family is not delivering unless, and here's the big unless, here's my little idea that's floated through my head. Why couldn't you take that $10,000 or whatever it is we spend per student in this school district in St. Louis and use it to hire a lot of tutors that maybe handle only 5 or 6 students at a time, and maybe even just tutor them out of their own homes, maybe assisted by a parent volunteer, and then you recreate kind of a family-like environment that's more nurturing. There's more individual attention on each student. You can tailor the education to that student's needs, and of course, there would also be more individual accountability, and the student would be more inclined to want to participate in that instead of face a hallway full of milling students, some of whom are bullies and teasing them and that kind of thing.
Thanks for the call. Anyone have any thoughts on that? I'll go to the table. Ruby, are you ready to go?
I'll jump in here. I think that that is a very interesting idea. I think that definitely building relationships for children is really important in their ability to go to school and to thrive, even with bullies and academic struggles. When kids feel supported and loved outside of the school building, they can deal with what's happening in school much better. That's one of the reasons why we are so committed to providing mentors for children, because those are those caring adults who are going to talk to kids and give them that resilience to go back into the situation, but also come out of it a little bit stronger and to really still be able to focus at school, knowing that if this day goes bad, there's somebody who I can call and talk to about it, even if my parents can't listen.
Jamie Jordan, thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with Ruby. And what the caller said, you know, nurturing and individual attention, that's what we do strive to do in public education as well. And I think that that's something that's really important to build up the self-esteem and build up this nurturing for the whole building so that the student feels positive and is able to come to school, but that there is individual attention that each student gets when they come into the door, either through a mentor, through a teacher, through the friends that they meet when they come into school.
Professor Bonfons, thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think the core idea is right. I mean, I think it's still important that kids learn how to succeed in school, because ultimately you've got to continue on in school to be prepared for a job. But it is true that, you know, once you've got a pattern of chronic absenteeism, we either have to solve a problem or change a behavior, and that really can't be done unless we have a relationship with you that's positive. And that takes people power.
Back to the phones. Aaron in St. Louis, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I come from it at the angle from foster care. I was one of those kids that had a lot of developmental delays. I was in speech therapy, remedial math, remedial reading, and all of those special classes. But there came a point in time where I missed as much as I could because I was frustrated, and I knew that the staff at the school, this was in rural Missouri, was frustrated as well. I also came from a home where there was a lot of mental health issues with my parents. I didn't necessarily have the structure, and so I was in and out of foster care. And I'm sure things have changed, but at that time, you know, the school system was just not structured to care for, you know, to address my needs as someone who is falling behind. And so by the time I hit high school, I opted to, you know, to quit school, get my GED,
since then, I've put myself through college, and I've learned the skills that I needed. But I think a lot of our foster youth and our kids that are couch surfing, that are out on the streets, are in those same in that same category.
Thank you so much for the call. Professor, let me turn to you for a response on that one.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm actually greatly concerned about our foster care system, because we did a study in Philadelphia that showed that essentially 80% of kids in foster care dropped out, which is sort of a total system failure if you think about what the purpose of foster care is. So I would agree with the caller that those are the kids that fall through the cracks. They don't have advocates to the same extent. And that's why I keep saying that, like it or not, we really have to build our schools so they can really reach out and find a way to support these kids that don't have those supports outside of school.
Jamie?
I was just going to say, I completely agree. I know that people want to say that schools are just for educating, but it is the only place that students from kindergarten to 18 are mandated to be at for 6.5 or so hours a day. You know, so really looking at the schools as a way for complete wraparound services is really important. But we just have to keep in mind that most educators are educated in a different thing than social work needs. So if we want to create school systems that are more encompassing and wraparound, we have to pull in community resources. We have to bring social workers to the table. We have to be looking at cutting edge, because to expect the teachers to do all of this stuff in an area that they're not educated in is unfair to the teacher. So really making sure that we bring the right people to the table to be the support systems for these students, all students, the foster care students, or even the students whose parents spend 3 weeks in Europe and they need those extra supports through mentorships, I think is really, really important. So, but it is, like I said, the only place where kids are mandated to be by law. So we need to take full advantage of every single minute during that day.
And Ruby, this again is where mentors certainly could play a big, big role.
Exactly. And I think Jamie brought up a good point in that it's stability. Schools for a lot of kids, especially those in foster care, those who are transient or homeless, school is sometimes the most stable thing that's in their life. It's the only building that for 3 years they've gone to that same place. And so it really is important to have community resources working, because we can't all be the experts in everything. Our mentors can't be the experts in teaching kids how to read. They can be the experts in building those relationships. And then the other resources have to come in to really build on those areas where this is their wheelhouse. This is what they do.
I think Nathan, calling us from House Springs, has an idea about one resource that could be brought to bear on this situation. So let's listen to Nathan. Go ahead, Nathan.
Hi. Thanks. It's a really great topic. I'm a dentist at a community health center, and we have a in-school clinic in a middle school in the Northwest School District, and we have dental care, behavioral health, substance abuse, and soon to have primary care services there on site every day of the week. And it just goes along with what you had mentioned on wraparound services, and I just was going to get your guys' opinion on it.
Okay, thanks for the call. Jamie?
I love the idea. We actually also have a dental service. This year we had a vision van come out. We'd like to expand our health and services, just because even for the mere fact that instead of taking a kid out of school for a dentist appointment that's an hour, but by the time you transport them, wait in the office, see the dentist, wait in the office, and get back to school, that's half its school day, if not a full school day of somebody's work, you know, a parent's work as well as the student's learning. So having more embedded services like that where it can be come down to the dentist, see the dentist in 20, 30 minutes, get back to your class, is a lot less learning that's lost.
Professor Balfonce, something you've run into in New York.
It is, and it's a very important part of the solution, because one example is asthma. Lots of you live in a poor environment. The environmental factors are much more conducive to having you develop asthma. And as crazy as it may seem, some schools that have no resources, their only thing they can do if a kid has an asthma attack is to call 911. And that's not very effective for the kid. It's not very effective cost-wise. But when you have school-based health clinics, which many of us remember from when we grew up, there was always a nurse in the school. That's not the case always now. That there's many health needs that can be addressed quite quickly and keep kids in school if we just make sure there's access to them.
You know, we've done a number of programs here on Jeffrey Canada's Harlem Children's Zone. I'm sure you've run across that. How is that dealing with the situation? Does it have an effective program for dealing with absenteeism?
I believe it does. I mean, I'll be honest, I don't know a lot of the details of what they specifically do, but I do know they have very strong outcomes in their schools within that zone. So I'm assuming for that to happen, their kids have got to be there on a regular basis.
But they also have a lot of outside money coming in to help, which is above and beyond what the city is able to provide, as I understand it.
That's true.
Yeah. Back to the phones. Daniel in Crestwood, go ahead. It's your turn.
It kind of goes back quite a bit to something that Professor Belfont was saying a while ago. And it coincidentally ties right into my line of work. I work here in the St. Louis area for a St. Louis-based company that does school communications. And he was talking about how in New York they have so many people that their entire day is spent just calling and reaching out to parents and relatives trying to find out why children aren't in school. And one of the services that we provide is where there's an automated system that ties into their student database and attendance database that just when someone's marked absent, it goes out and calls every number that we have for that person to try to get someone on the phone who can then record a message and send that message right back to an email address at the school. And it, you know, seems to be saving these people that we talk to, you know, when I'm looking at it, you know, all kinds of time. And I'm wondering why, if they are, I didn't hear about it, and if not, why aren't the schools that you're looking at and working with in these areas using something similar?
All right. Thanks for the call. Jamie?
We do have something similar to that calls out when students are absent. And it does work with a certain percentage of students. But what we find with some of the kids that are chronically absent, they need that one-on-one. They need that personal phone call from the teacher who misses them or the mentor that misses them or even the parent. You know, I have often lots of different parents in my cell phone, you know, and it's just real easy with text messaging now and cell phones that I can call real quick from wherever I am in the building to see, you know, hey, I didn't see your student today or what do I need or how can I help? And those friendly voices actually foster more to get kids to school than actually just the robocalls.
After talking about this problem for almost an hour or so, Professor, let me come back to you. It seems like a major problem and people are concerned about it, but you say it's a reversible problem. How?
Well, from what we've heard in our call today, that first we just have to measure it, to know it's happening, and then we have to monitor it on a regular, everyday basis, and then we have to react to it. And we can set up systems to react to it both by having some good upfront prevention, by creating welcoming environments in our school, by communicating to our kids we're glad to see them every day and we're going to miss them if they're not there and we'll track them down and they know we will. And then by, as we said, bringing in outside partners to give us the person power to have the mentors we need to reach out to the kids that have more serious issues and then ultimately to have linked up with social service providers to solve those most serious issues. We're not going to get every kid. There's going to still be kids chronically absent, but we can make a really big dent in the problem.
One of the things that I've seen in some of the writings about this concerned incentives, providing some sort of incentives for the kids. And I know there's been some negative publicity here in the city of St. Louis because they've been giving kids these kinds of incentives, gifts, if you will, just for attending school on the first day of school so that they can puff up the attendance numbers. That's been widely criticized. What about the incentive notion? A good idea or bad, Professor?
Well, our experience is what we call social incentives, just public recognition, shout-outs for the best homeroom who's got the best improved attendance, recognition ceremonies for kids that have gotten most improved attendance, putting their picture on the wall. We had one story of people thought that a student was going to be disruptive when he was recognized for some good attendance just by his body language. He got up and started crying, and they said, why? And he said, because I've never been recognized for anything in my life.
Boy, something that that youngster probably would remember for the rest of his life, too. Jamie, your thoughts on that?
Well, I also – one of the things I really believe about students is really providing them ownership in their own education, so making sure that they're aware of their own attendance, you know, so that they can – they know what percentage of attendance they've had and keeping them a part of, like, their reflection, just like you do their grades. I believe that doing whatever it takes for whatever child, you know, some children it takes the phone call home, some children it takes a free first in line for lunch pass, you know, mm-hmm. But whatever it takes for the students, I think that the recognition and feeling happy to be at school is really, really important. And so I wouldn't say I'm against incentives. I just think each student is a puzzle and trying to figure out what makes that puzzle fit together the right way.
And Ruby, go ahead, Ruby.
Oh, And every student really does love being celebrated. That's when we look at our model, we collect data, and the first thing we do is celebrate all the kids who are doing well. Before we jump into these are the issues, here's where you're struggling, let's celebrate you for the great things you're doing. And kids love those sorts of things. So it really depends on the type of incentive. And we're also really big on accountability. So in all of our partner schools, we have attendance programs that really push kids to look at the other kids in their homeroom. And how can you make sure your buddy gets here tomorrow? Because there's something for the entire classroom. So it's a collective effort, and it's not just one kid by themselves.
Yeah, that peer motivation is a real, real big movement and really does work, especially with middle school kids.
Right. And who doesn't love to be celebrated, Ruby, by the way? I want to thank you all so much for being with us and drawing attention to this problem. Clearly it is one, and I'll remind folks that we're going to be spending a lot of time here at St. Louis Public Radio discussing that through the efforts of Tim Lloyd, from whom you heard just a little while ago. I want to thank Robert Balfonce, a research scientist at Johns Hopkins University, for being with us. Jamie Jordan from the Brittany Woods Middle School, thank you for being here. And Ruby Jones with Big Brothers Big Sisters of Eastern Missouri, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk to Paul and Midge McKee about the progress of their major North St. Louis development project. Archive versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis On the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.